Hello and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero, co-host for the show with Dana Lake. I'll be your host for the next hour, and Dana returns next week. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. and are always covering a wide range of topics related to health, diet, nutrition, wellness, and a variety of medical topics in general. Try and give you helpful suggestions when we can, and we usually always have a nice special guest on to add to our expert panel of people who advise us and share information with you all. The show is archived on the Village Green website, so if you happen to catch the show in the middle or you want to see about any other shows that we've done, you can log on to www.myvillagegreen.com and you can listen to any archive shows. Usually takes a couple weeks to get the most recent shows up. During this hour, we're going to be covering a variety of different topics. I'm going to be covering a sort of smattering of things. I have a bunch of health news update type ideas to go over with you, some things, latest research on health and wellness, vitamins and nutrients, breaking news that's come out in some recent studies. I also want to spend some time discussing with you some very interesting research that I've come across recently relating to keeping you safe as you get older in regards to the use of prescription drugs. I'm actually going to cover some of the most dangerous prescription drugs that are out there, the ones that have the highest risk of adverse events or serious adverse events, which includes disability and even death. And we're going to be talking about some of the ways to avoid the pitfalls of getting caught in the pharmaceutical trap. Not to say that pharmaceuticals aren't useful, but ideally, and I think any doctor would say this, it's the best situation is to avoid the use of any kind of pharmaceutical to begin with by keeping yourself healthy enough. So I'm just going to be getting into some really specific recommendations regarding, certain pharmaceuticals and which ones are the best ones to avoid, and just some really interesting information. You might be surprised at which ones rank at some of the highest on the list of pharmaceuticals that are associated with serious adverse events. I'm also going to have a great special guest on. We have a PhD doctor who's going to be on today talking about silicone. You know, silicone most people associate with a mineral in the earth or, you know, probably breast implants, but that's not at all what we're relating to today. We're going to be talking about the nutrient silicone and how this micronutrient plays very significant roles in certain aspects of our body's health. You know, specifically, we're going to relate it to information regarding heart health, because silicone has a very important role in maintaining the integrity of the lining of the blood vessels. Silicone is also very important for nail and hair strength. It's one of the nutrients similar to calcium in regards to its capacity for helping with the strength of our connective tissue and also with bone health. You know, just like calcium as related to hair and nails, the bony structures and connective tissue of our body, silicone can have a very important role with conditions like osteoporosis and osteopenia in supporting the health of the bones. So just to give you a little bit of background, my name is Dr. Kevin Passero, and I'm a naturopathic doctor. I did my training out in Portland, Oregon at one of only four nationally accredited medical schools for naturopathic medicine. I have a private practice in Annapolis, and I also do some one-on-one consulting with people at the Village Green in Bethesda. The Village Green is a pharmacy, compounding pharmacy and retail store, that has been specializing in integrative and complementary medicine for about 30 years now. You know, you can come there and just get your regular pharmaceuticals filled by our wonderful pharmacy staff, or you can discuss things like compounding pharmacy, which is custom pharmacy for your individual needs, or you can come in and talk to myself if I'm available, or any of the wonderful nutritional consultants we have about any of the thousands and thousands of health and wellness products we have, supplements, herbs, homeopathics, and we have some really great people who have been in this industry for 25, 30 years helping people with their health concerns with more natural means. So you can come on in and take a look at the different supplements we have and figure out if there's anything that might be appropriate for you. So it's a wonderful resource. It's located right over on West Cedar Lane. So if you get a chance, you know, you can give them a call. I'm there on Tuesdays from noon until 6. So if you hear something on the show that you have a question about, you can feel free to give the store a call. And, you know, I'll make sure to get back to you either that same day or the next Tuesday that I'm in to try and answer any questions that you might have. You can also go onto their website, www.myvillagegreen.com, to set up a one-on-one consultation. consultation with me where I can sit down and go over your specific health needs or concerns and help you, you know, figure out any strategies that you might need. So first, I just want to give you a few updates. You know, before I do the show every week, I always go online to some of my resources and I look at some of the, you know, newest headlines that have come out regarding the field of diet and nutrition and vitamins. And I always have it as a potential, you know, for filler in case I run out of time. But the problem is that I never run out of time, so I never get to review these things. So this week I thought I would just dedicate a specific part of this segment to reviewing some of these things. So usually what I'll do is I'll look at the past 2 weeks of research and I'll try and pull things that are big trends in the research, meaning that if there's a particular nutrient or a particular vitamin that there's been 3 or 4 new studies that have come out, well, good studies, I'll make sure to pull those together. And then ones that I see continue to see week after week after week. And then, of course, anything that's just interesting. So in the last 2 weeks, there's been some really nice studies that have come out regarding green tea. So there's one that the topic of the study was green tea may reduce the risk of breast cancer. And it was a pretty good study. It involved 3,454 women with breast cancer and 3,474 controls. So that's a pretty good, you know, population group. That's only almost 7,000 participants that they observed in the study. And they were between the ages of 20 and 74 years. So it was a big variation as far as age is concerned. And they were looking and they found that regular consumption of green tea was found to be associated with a slightly reduced risk of breast cancer. So as compared to non-drinkers of green tea. So it wasn't a huge potential risk reduction, but it was a slightly reduced risk. And in a population that large over that great of an age span, it's actually very interesting information. Green tea contains something called EGCGs, which are these specific compounds, very, very specific to green tea, that have been well documented to have anti-cancer effects. Now, this leads right into the next one. There were two things about green tea. The next title was Green Tea Catechins Enhances Weight and Abdominal Fat Reducing Effects of Exercise. So basically what they found is that people who consume green tea in addition to doing their exercise had a greater loss than people just doing the exercise alone, a greater weight loss. Now, it's interesting. I like what they did with this study. It involved about 107 overweight or obese adults, and they studied people with the consumption of a beverage containing green tea catechins, which are a specific compound in green tea, of 625 milligrams and 39 milligrams of caffeine for a period of 12 weeks, was found to enhance the effects of moderate intensity exercise on weight loss, abdominal fat loss, and reduction of triglycerides as compared to a control beverage. Now, what's interesting is you might say, well, we all know that caffeine is a stimulant and that caffeine will help with weight loss, right? There's been a, you know, huge amount of weight loss products on the market that contain caffeine. But what they did, which was nice, is they used the control beverage, which contained the same amount of caffeine, 39 milligrams, but didn't have the green tea catechins, which are those very, very important green tea molecules that are, seem to stimulate the weight loss. So it had nothing to do with the caffeine. It had everything to do with the very unique properties associated with green tea. So I've always told people, if you just switch your morning cup of coffee to green tea, you can usually count on a 5 to 7 pound weight loss after about a month without doing anything else at all. And that's simply due to these specific compounds that are in green tea. Now, you add to that the potential effects of it lowering the risk of breast cancer, and you have a very convincing argument of why you should be drinking green tea in the morning instead of coffee. The next one was related to vitamin D, and vitamin D, every single week where you go, you're going to be hard-pressed not to find a study that was done on green tea. And this one was interesting because it linked high blood levels of vitamin D to a much lower association of fasting glucose. So this is a study that has linked vitamin D status to basically a reduced risk of diabetes, which is very interesting. We know vitamin D is correlated with a lot of different health effects, but with diabetes, there is a lot of emerging research in regards to that. So again, another interesting one and a very great reason to be taking your vitamin D. So we're going to go ahead and head to the break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to have the special guest on. I'm going to talk about this very interesting nutrient, silicone. So again, this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, which is sponsored by The Village Green. Stay with us. Again, after the break, we're going to have a wonderful special guest on and be covering some really great topics. So we will be right back. Hello and welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by The Village Green. I am Dr. Kevin Passero, your host for the next hour. In the last segment, we were covering some interesting news and some interesting studies regarding things such as green tea and vitamin D. If you missed it and you'd like to hear the beginning of the show, you can always go to the Village Green homepage, which is www.myvillagegreen.com, and you can click on the archive shows. And you know, every show that we do is archived on the site, and we just have a wonderful array of some really interesting topics related to health, wellness, and nutrition. So in this segment, I'm going to bring on my special guest. His name is Kevin Connolly. And he has a PhD, and he is the Director of Scientific Affairs and Product Development at Jarrow Formulas, which is a wonderful manufacturer of vitamins and supplements. Previously, he spent 15 years in basic biochemistry research, elucidating such diverse mechanisms as bacterial antibiotic resistance, which is a very hot topic these days, and collagen synthesis, another very hot topic. He's an inventor on several medical device patents and is a frequent guest on radio health programs throughout the country. So, Kevin, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So today I have informed my listeners we're going to be talking about silicone, which, you know, I said at the beginning of the show, a lot of people just associate with breast implants, but obviously not what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be regarding it more and refer to it as its actual, as a nutrient.
Right. So, right. Well, maybe we should clear up something right from the beginning. And it's a source of a lot of confusion. Silicon is the trace element. The nutrient, the mineral. Silicone is a plastic made out of silicon plus carbon and various other molecules. And they're, you know, they're vastly different compounds. One being the plastic that we're familiar with, breast implants, but also silicone actually has a lot of other useful applications to technology. But silicon, the element, is actually a really fundamental trace element in human nutrition that is very, very unsung, because it's only been in the last maybe like 30 years or so we really started to realize its importance and the kind of reactions that it participates in.
So silicon, I mean, where do we get it as humans in a normal diet? I imagine that it's, you know, part of the mineral content of soil, and so it comes through, you know, in plants and in our diet that way. But, you know, can you tell us about how it, you know, naturally occurs in a human diet and where rich sources of it might be or how we would usually get it?
Well, you touched upon it. And since that silicon is actually the second most abundant element on the planet, it gets dissolved in groundwater because it's present in the soil, that the plants take it up in their roots, and plants will store it as polymers, long chains of silicon, and that's called silica. And if you've been to a health food store and you saw silica gel or horsetail silica, mm-hmm. This is the way that the plants store the silicon. And we get it in our diet through predominantly through plants. You get it through some animal products as well, but really good plant sources would be mostly the grasses, mm-hmm. Grains, for instance. The thing that's tricky about this is that rice, for instance, has an extremely high amount of silicon, but it's in the bran and it's in the hull.
I see.
The parts we normally don't eat, and right. That's the same for most grains.
Mm-hmm. So you got to eat those whole grains, you're more likely to get the content of the silica.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. We talked about you know, it being this silica. If you go into a health food store and you're looking at silica products, right, you're going to see things like you know, horsetail silica. So that's an herb, botanical medicinal herb that contains high amounts of it. Nettles also contain a high amount of it. A lot of times, you're going to see these types of herbs in formulas for things like bone health. So, you know, why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, how silicon is, how it relates to bone health, silicone?
Absolutely. So the interesting thing about silicon is it's really important for really only one or two reactions in the body. And the most important is probably the making, the construction of collagen. So collagen is this protein. It's the most abundant protein in the animal kingdom, and all animals use it in order to build connective tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Connective tissue meaning anything that's holding cells together to form tissues and organs. So the bones, for instance, very high in collagen. You've got collagen forming the shape of the bone, and then the calcium embeds itself into the collagen, and that's what mineralizes the bone and gives it its strength. So you can sort of see that any tissue that has collagen in it can really benefit from proper silicon nutrition. So in the case of bones, when the purpose of silicon was actually discovered by studying bone metabolism, they found back in the 60s that animals on silicon-deficient diets didn't develop bones correctly. The bones were very flexible, very weak, not a lot of collagen in them. They didn't mineralize properly. So we know now, and through more modern research, that by supplementing with silicon or getting proper silicon in the diet leads to greater collagen production in the bones and hence better bone density.
So how do we, you know, we look at, you know, what we eat in our diet. Now, you mentioned that, you know, silicon is very abundant. It's one of the most abundant minerals in the Earth's crust. Is that correct? Is that what you said? Second most? Yep. So, you know, we look at the food that we get. Now, I know there's a lot of issues with nutrients from food these days because of farming practices and because of the way that the agricultural industry, you know, mass farms, and we end up depleting the soil and not having the rich nutrient content that the soil should have. So where do we draw the line between, are we getting enough in our diets? You know, do we need to supplement? Is there any bodies of research that have been able to document that supplementing with additional silicone is helpful for bone health or bone structure, or collagen synthesis? I mean, where do we draw the line? And how do we make the decision of, should we just eat more vegetables and eat more plant material, or should we actually look at supplementation?
Well, here's the interesting thing is that since silicon is so abundant in the Earth's crust, unlike other trace elements, it's very hard. You'd be hard pressed to find a plant growing that in soil that is silicon deficient.
Mm-hmm.
So plants will usually get enough silicon to grow. What happens though is, and this is what kind of distinguishes it from other trace elements, is that it would appear based on research that as we get older, our ability to extract the silicon from the plants that we eat becomes diminished. I mean, there are several studies looking at the amount of silicon that's normally found, like in the bloodstream,
right,
over time as we age, and you can see really dramatic drops in both men and women in serum silicon. One of the reasons being that, as we mentioned before, silicon comes in these long chains called silica or,
right, mm-hmm,
or silica gel. In order for us to use this silicon, we need to liberate it from this chain. We need to break these chains down into individual silicon molecules, and this is called orthosilicic acid. So breaking down the silica from these plants occurs through digestion.
Mm-hmm.
And if our digestive system isn't tip-top, especially it's something we see as we age, we'll not be able to break the silica down and liberate this free orthosilicic acid, which your body's going to use as the nutrient. So it would appear that while you can find silicon in a lot of different things, a lot of different plants, a lot of different dietary plants, you might not be able to actually extract enough out to give yourself optimal silicon health.
Right. So obviously this is, you know, a common problem regarding many different nutrients. As we age, we reduce the amount of hydrochloric acid that the stomach makes. We reduce the amount of pancreatic enzymes that we use for digestion. Digestion in general often does become a little bit less efficient as we get older. So we see a lot of different nutrient deficiencies as we get older. So, I mean, this is, I guess, a very important factor. So would you say, you know, you have younger people, you know, we know that, let's say we're talking about bone health. So let's talk about the subset of women for a minute, because they're usually the most concerned with bone loss. We know that, you know, some of the greatest amount of bone building occurs when women are quite young, you know, somewhere between the ages of, you know, 16 to 25. But at that age, their digestion might be a little bit stronger. Would you maybe reserve a silicon supplementation for women or even men when they get a little bit older?
It would appear that that's probably the best time. I mean, if you compare in this one study that I can remember off the top of my head when they were looking at silicon in the blood, comparing like younger people, 18 to you know, older people, 50s,
yep,
60s, it really was like a factor of two difference.
So it was a significant difference,
right? So it's probably more suited for older people,
right? Okay, very interesting. So what is the best way to supplement with silicon?
Well, the best silicon supplements are probably ones that have this free orthosilicic acid.
Because your body, obviously, if you're older, right, and you're getting a formula, say a bone formula that contains silica, you still run into the problem of how do you break that down to increase your blood levels?
Correct. Silica does have its benefits. Maybe we can talk about that later if we have time. But silicon, free silicon orthosilicic acid is the form your body's going to use, and that's probably the best way to get it.
Okay. Now, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, in studies on orthosilicic acid and bone growth, they showed that while we know that the American diet might have 5 to 20 milligrams of silicon per day in it, not all of this is probably as available to us, to our bones, whereas taking that group of people and just supplementing them with 10 extra milligrams a day showed significant increases in bone growth. So you probably... while you might have a lot of silicon in the diet, it would appear that it might not be, especially in older people, might not be as available as one would want.
Hmm. Very, very interesting. So we're going to need to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to finish. I have a couple other questions for you following up regarding this issue of bone health and silicone, but I also want to talk about how it relates to other aspects of health in regards to collagen synthesis. So we have Kevin Connolly on the phone with us, and when we come back from the break, we're going to be picking up this conversation. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero on AM 1260, sponsored by The Village Green. We will be right back. And welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by The Village Green. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero, your host for the next hour. Dana Lake will return next week. In the last segment, we were talking with Kevin Connolly, a PhD researcher and director of scientific affairs and product development at Jarrow Formulas. And we were discussing the very interesting properties of the nutrient silicone. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
So we had been just talking about the aspects of silicone and how important it is for collagen synthesis. Now, we had been discussing bone, and I want to ask you a few more questions that specifically relates to bone. But first, you know, I want people to understand collagen is not just, collagen is everywhere on the body. It represents all your connective tissue. So we're talking about the fascia that surrounds your muscle. We're talking about tendons. We're talking about ligaments. We're talking about cartilage-based products. We're talking about bone health. I mean, collagen, skin, we're talking about something that is so pervasive throughout the body. Poor collagen health can possibly relate in so many health conditions. So supporting optimal collagen health is very, very important, particularly as we age and collagen starts to break down. And we just discussed in the last segment how one of the biggest issues with silicon is not so much that we become deficient in it, or not so much that we don't consume enough of it in our diet, but silicone requires our body to break it down into smaller structures that are more easily absorbed. And as we get older, it becomes more difficult for our digestive system to extract the silicone out of the diet. And that's why supplementation becomes more important. So did I get all that right, Kevin?
That was very good.
Okay. So, what I wanted to talk about the last thing. So are there actually some research studies in humans out there that have documented silicone supplementation with increases in bone formation and bone density? I mean, would you consider this a crucial part of any type of treatment recommendation for someone that has osteopenia or osteoporosis?
Oh, absolutely. One of the most telling ones was done a couple years ago, and they were looking at they were comparing groups of people who supplemented with calcium and vitamin D, and people who supplemented with calcium, vitamin D, and silicon. And the calcium and vitamin D group didn't really see any significant change in their bone mineral density, while the silicon group actually did. So here's one additional nutrient added to this regimen that actually made the difference in increasing the strength and the density of bone.
Yeah, because we know so much about calcium, obviously, and then you know, in the last several years, there's been a huge, you know, movement with vitamin D. So we know those two nutrients are crucial, but it sounds like, you know, supplementing with silicone is just as crucial to making that combination of things work.
Correct. Yeah. Okay.
And when we're talking about supplementation, you were saying about 10 extra milligrams a day is what we would, is what we would sort of recommend.
The studies on orthosilicic acid, we're using between, I think, 6 and 12 milligrams, for, bone growth and around 10 for, health of the skin. So it seems to be a biologically relevant dosage in that range.
Okay. Now, Jaro, I mean, you're director of scientific affairs and product development. So, I mean, they have a product, you know, specifically for this, correct?
Yes, we do have an orthosilicic acid product.
And that's what, Jarosil, is that what it's called?
Jarosil, yeah.
Okay. And that delivers, what's the dose? When you take that, what dosage do you get?
A single dose is about 4 milligrams.
4 milligrams. So you recommend what, 2 doses a day?
In order to reach the levels that have been documented.
Okay. Yet. Are there any side effects or any other things that people should be concerned about when they're taking silicone supplementally?
No, it's very safe. Safety studies have shown it really has no effects anywhere else except for growing out the silicone. And it's really, if you think about it, four to 10 milligrams of silicone isn't very, very much more than you'd probably be getting in your diet already. The
right.
only difference is this is a little more bioavailable.
Right, exactly. It's just that it's more available for your body to actually utilize. So it's not necessarily using high doses of anything. It's just using doses of something that your body can actually utilize.
The epidemiology studies in looking at Indian and Asian populations show that their diets have up to 300 milligrams a day.
And is that because they consume a diet higher in vegetable content or plant content?
Likely higher in vegetable content, higher in unrefined grains.
Yes. Okay. So the whole grains, because as you mentioned earlier in the show, it's the bran part of the grain that's going to contain the high amounts of silica.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. So we've been talking about bone health. I mean, very, very important topic. Let's talk about, you know, skin. We all, you know, I think, you know, we live in America, which is often a very beauty obsessed culture. So I'm sure a lot of people out there have heard about collagen injections and know about this aspect of collagen and the importance of it for the health of our skin and for the health of, you know, reducing the appearance of fine line and wrinkles and for basically, you know, health and beauty in a way. So, I mean, the skin is formed from so much collagen, and one of the reasons why the skin doesn't look as well when we age is because that collagen starts to break down. So help us understand how, you know, silicone supplementation relates specifically to skin health in the regards to how we look and also other aspects of skin health.
Well, they've known for a fair amount of time that skin contains a lot of collagen and that it's a high content, fairly high content of silicone in the skin. And recently we've been looking at, let's see if we were to add it back supplementally, can we see any improvements? There was a study done a few years ago where they're taking women, older women who had photo-damaged skin, had a lot of sun exposure,
yep.
had a lot of fine line and wrinkles, and they were giving them a silicone supplement for, God, the amount of time escapes me, I think it was like 20 weeks. But what they started to see was at the end of the study compared to the placebo group, they start to see that the incidence, the frequency, and the depth of micro wrinkles, these very, very small wrinkles, started to subside.
Mm-hmm.
The skin appeared tighter. And they did this by a very quantitative measurement, using like lasers to measure the depth and the length of wrinkles, so that it wasn't just an objective visual assessment. They actually showed statistically that the amount of wrinkles abated as people took these silicone supplements.
Right.
So it would appear that silicone actually has a very profound role in maintaining collagen in skin of older people.
So not only does it help your bones, but it also helps you look a little younger too.
Perhaps so, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. We know that, you know, collagen structures start to break down as we get older just by the fact of aging and being older, you know, and gravity taking its toll on the skin. But if you bring into this factor how, you know, our bodies are less able to break down silicone from the diet as we age, it definitely makes sense, you know, that that might also contribute to why skin tends to look older and start to have the formation of fine line and wrinkles as we age. So it's definitely very interesting. Any other aspects of skin health besides wrinkles and fine lines or anything like that, that silicone has to do with?
It's mostly the collagen. They start to investigate whether hydration was affected, and they didn't seem to get any results on that, which isn't surprising because I think most hydration in the skin is really responsible for like hyaluronic acid and mm-hmm. glycosaminoglycan. So mm-hmm. it would appear at this point that it's silicone's major role in the skin would really be strengthening of the collagen in the skin.
Have there been any studies with silicone regarding wound healing, as far as, you know, post surgery or post injury? Because, you know, we know that the formation of collagen coming back is an important part of the wound healing process.
That's a very interesting topic. I mean, I think a lot of this silicone research is really picked up in the last few years. So I'm certain that this is one of the areas that will be looked at next.
Very interesting. So any other, you know, really interesting properties of silicone, or any other really interesting aspects of health that we might relate to silicone to help us understand, you know, who might be a good candidate to maybe supplement with a little extra? You know, I mean, I think we've already created a pretty convincing argument for doing it, you know, just for bone and skin health and the health of the collagen. But any other really interesting areas of research as you've seen?
There's a few. How much time do I have?
We're doing good. We got about, you know, probably 2 or 3 minutes before the next break, and then, you know, we'll pick it up after that for a couple minutes.
Oh, okay. So getting back to collagen, there's also a lot of collagen in the arteries. And so arteries, very important because they have to take the pressure of the heartbeat. They have to be flexible. They also have to expand and contract with the muscle cells in the arteries. So you can see that a strong artery, obviously, it contributes to cardiovascular health, and that strong collagen in the artery is going to be one of the contributing factors to this. And so a couple animal models and epidemiology studies done in Europe, they showed that if you give, in an animal model, if you give a high cholesterol, high fat diet to one animal, to one group, and then another group, you give the same diet and you give silicone, they actually showed in three separate studies that the animals given the silicone had a significantly lower incidence of plaques. And a significantly higher survival rate, which would suggest that not that that silicone lowers cholesterol, but rather plaques form in the arteries when you have an injury and your body starts to repair it.
Yeah, that's right.
So you get these little micro tears, mm-hmm. your body starts to fill it in with cholesterol to plug it up. It's sort of its natural defense mechanism for it. However, if you get less of these micro tears by having stronger collagen, the incidence of plaques might decrease. Now, whether or not that works in people hasn't been shown in a clinical trial, though epidemiologically they showed that in two separate studies out of Finland, if you take a population group or two population groups, both of which have similar diets but different water supplies, one in a high silicon area, one in a low silicon area, they found that the group in the high silicon area had a lower incidence of cardiovascular events.
So it
would suggest that some of this animal data actually might be applicable to humans as well.
Very.
This is another area which bears some further scrutiny and further research, of course.
Yeah, it's some very interesting preliminary evidence. It certainly will be interesting to see if there's more research regarding that. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll pick this up and finish up any talking points we have about silicone. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living on 1260 AM, sponsored by the Village Green. And we will be right back after this break. And welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by The Village Green. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero, your host for this morning. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. This show we've had covered a wide variety of topics. Just lately we've been talking about silicone. So I wanted to wrap up that conversation. We have Kevin Connolly on the phone, who is a PhD researcher and director of scientific affairs and product development for a very well-respected supplement company. And we've been talking about silicone. So Kevin, just wanted to sort of wrap up the topic a little bit. What other things do you think people should know about when it comes to silicone and benefits of supplementation?
One interesting one that people have actually known about for a while, but they're, just studies just come out on, is its effect on hair and nails. Hair and nails don't really have collagen in them. They're made by a different mechanism, and it's a little harder to understand why silicone actually has an effect, but we've been getting anecdotal evidence for years of people taking a silicone supplement and seeing their nails grow a lot faster, a lot stronger, and there's some recent research that sort of bears that out and shows an increase in nail strength and hair strength. One last one, which is kind of interesting, is that it would appear that silicone is actually pretty good at removing aluminum from the body. So aluminum ends up being a very common toxin in or contaminant in municipal water supplies, and there's several studies on looking at silicon both as silica gel, the polymers, and as orthosilicic acid, the individual silicons, really helping the body to avoid absorption of aluminum, but also to increase the excretion of accumulated aluminum out of the body. This is important because it would appear that aluminum can concentrate in certain areas of the brain, and this might have some sort of bearing on the incidence of different types of dementia.
Yeah, Alzheimer's particularly, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I think they've documented elevated levels of aluminum in brains that have Alzheimer's. So that's very interesting. So the silica seems to be able, is there any research so far in human models regarding silica and rates of dementia, or have we not gotten that far with the research yet?
There has been research on aluminum levels in the brain and silicon.
And it being able to reduce...
I don't recall whether or not they looked at dementia specifically.
And its ability to reduce the aluminum levels in brain tissue?
Correct.
In human models?
In human models, yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Well, there seems to be a lot of really good reasons why somebody might consider using silicone supplementation. So that was really great. I mean, we had bone health. We had skin health, heart health, brain health, nail health, and hair health, right?
It does a lot of things.
And the form of supplementation that it comes in, is it a liquid or is it a capsule?
In the product that we sell.
Yeah, in the jar or so.
Is a liquid.
Is a liquid, okay. Great. Well, thank you so much. It's Dr. Connolly, correct?
Kevin is fine.
Kevin is fine. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Kevin. I really appreciate you being on the show today and sharing all this great information with us.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
All right. You take care.
You too.
So I hope that was helpful for everyone. You know, I've been using silicone supplementation with patients specifically for osteoporosis and osteopenia issues for a while. So it's definitely something that is worth considering. And as you can, see from having Dr. Connolly on, there is a lot of interesting research that does back that up, specifically incorporating it with your calcium and vitamin D supplementation. And it's kind of nice, there are several different products out there. The Jarosil one is pretty nice because it does come as a liquid, so it's not another pill to have to swallow, and it can easily be added to any kind of, beverage or anything like that. So it is definitely something to consider. If you have further questions about it, like I said, you can feel free to call the Village Green and ask me any questions, or one of the nutritional representatives there should be able to help you out. So in this last few minutes, we don't have too much time left, but I want to talk about drug safety and some of the drugs that have made the worst drug list out there. So, current data released in the past few years strongly indicates drug safety is becoming a huge epidemic and threatening the lives of a lot of Americans. A study released in 2007 showed that reports of serious adverse drug effects reported to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration more than doubled from the years 1998 to 2005. Now listen to this. A serious adverse drug event is defined as one that results in death, a birth defect, disability, hospitalization, was life-threatening, or needed some type of medical intervention to avoid harm. A more recent study to the government showed that the number of serious drug reactions and deaths shot up in the first 3 months of this year, and is set to set a new record. That was actually data for 2008. Obviously, not enough time yet for 2009. But drugs, I think it was 5,519 people reported adverse drug reactions in 1998, 15,000 people in 2005, and we were expected to reach 20,000 people in 2008. So, you know, what it boils down to, or what they're finding out, is it's not so much that there's so many more drugs being prescribed. It has to do with the drugs that are being prescribed and the population that they're being prescribed to. So as Americans are getting older, the drug reactions are getting worse. And there are some things to consider that as we age, we have more body fat. So drugs accumulate more. Our metabolism of our detoxification organs, primarily our kidneys and our liver, slows down, so we don't metabolize drugs as quickly. And we also get into the issue as more drugs are being prescribed for one single person. So these drugs are starting to interact with each other and creating effects that we don't know. You know, people talk about all the time, well, how do you know what these herbs are doing? Can you combine this herb with that herb? Do you know what they're doing? Well, in a lot of ways, we're not always 100% sure, but I guarantee you there's a lot less certainty in regards to how pharmaceuticals are combined and the potential effects that combining pharmaceuticals have on people. They study individual drugs, but it's very rare that research extends of research is done on the effects of multiple pharmaceuticals in one person. So, you know, there just seems to be this huge, huge factor with this. After we can see metabolism issues starting in people after the age of 35, and it can be significantly different by the time a person reaches age 45, as far as how their body metabolizes drugs. And these factors are rarely taken into account when doctors are writing prescriptions. So I want to talk about the worst drug list. Okay, so there's the list of the top 15 drugs associated with fatal events. Of course, I'm going to tell you number one is oxycodone. That's the number one drug. This is a painkiller. Now, what's really interesting, you know, there's a bunch that are on the top as painkillers in the top five. Morphine is number four. Clozapine is another one, which is number three, which is not a painkiller, but more of a anti-anxiety medication. Now, these drugs just have a high potential for abuse, and that is why I think they end up in the top 15 drugs associated with fatal offense because of their abuse potential. But number five, something that a lot of people wouldn't expect, is acetaminophen. So this is the generic name for basically Tylenol. Acetaminophen is number five on the list of the top 15 drugs associated with fatal events because acetaminophen can have a high toxicity level on the liver. So this is might be in regards to people trying to overdose on acetaminophen, or people inadvertently overdosing on acetaminophen, or the interactions that these have. We also have to consider that non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, which is the classification of acetaminophen and ibuprofen, they can lead to the degradation of the lining of the stomach and the small intestines, and can put people at a higher risk for developing ulcers, particularly bleeding ulcers. And these bleeding ulcers can oftentimes in elderly people, let's say somebody has arthritis and for the last 15 years they've been taking one of these over-the-counter pain medications every day, twice a day. Well, these can lead to bleeding ulcers, and a lot of times these bleeding ulcers are diagnosed too late and the bleeding cannot be stopped. And it is very likely that these situations can often lead to death, unfortunately. Now, there's the list of the top 15 drugs associated with disability or serious outcomes. The first one on there is estrogens. So this is a result of the information that we got in 2002 regarding the Women's Health Initiative, where we realized that hormone replacement was not a great thing for all women. So estrogens are high up there on the list. Now, number eight is very interesting. Number eight is Lipitor. Lipitor was number eight in the top 15 drugs associated with disability or a serious outcome. The other really interesting thing is that Lipitor was the number one prescribed drug in 2007, which is where all this data comes from. So the number one drug that was prescriptions written for in 2007 hit in the top 10 of the top 15 drugs associated with disability or serious outcomes. So it is very important to exercise all other options before turning to pharmaceuticals. This means find a person who can help you figure out a strategy, whether it be diet, whether it be nutrition, whether it be exercise, whether it be supplements, that can safely guide you to dealing with these health concerns that can be addressed through other means. There were 2.8 billion prescriptions written in 2007, which is an average of 9.9 prescriptions per American. This is a health model that is not going to work for Americans in the long run. So I just thought that was some really interesting information. Unfortunately, as always, time is running short and I need to sign off. So thank you so much for being with me today. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero, and this has been The Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by The Village Green. Again, we're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. and cover a wide range of subjects. You can always go online and listen to archive shows by visiting www.myvillagegreen.com. And again, if you have any questions, please feel free to call the store on Tuesdays when I'm there, or just stop by. We're located right over on West Cedar Lane. So thank you and have a great weekend, and I will see you guys very soon. Bye-bye.